Would you like to be able to start conversations like a pro? Take the Sunday World, your daily dose of what's going on. Do not consume the Sunday World if you're involved in a drug cartel, you're a politician with something to hide, or you've appeared on a reality TV show and care about others' opinions. Consume the Sunday World responsibly. Always read the stories, gossip, and commentary.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
So once a trial begins, it becomes very, very difficult for new evidence to be introduced. Once it begins, you know, Jerry Hutch is likely to know what he faces. State witnesses, people that are entering or due to enter the witness protection program, they have come under very, very stern cross-examination. There's been a checkered history, I suppose, of how those statements have been received in Irish courts.
I'm Nicola Tallant, and you're listening to Crime World, a podcast about criminals, drugs, and the sins of the underworld in Ireland and across the globe.
The trial of Jerry the Monk Hutch looks set to go ahead next week, despite new witness statements and the dramatic turnaround of his former co-accused, Jonathan Dowdall. The Special Criminal Court has been told that the trial is all systems go to start and that Hutch is anxious to proceed in his not guilty plea to the murder of David Byrne. But do documents leaked onto social media purporting to relate to Dowdall's statements give an indication of where this trial might go? Today, I'm talking to Sunday World Deputy Editor Niall Donald about the ongoing developments in the biggest trial of recent times. This is Crime World, a podcast from sundayworld.com. Well, it's obvious that Hutch is in custody and is anxious that the trial proceed, because if it doesn't, God knows when it will come on. And Justice Tara Burns did warn both the prosecution, not warn, she sort of just alerted the prosecution and the defence to the fact that this trial is marked in and that the special criminal courts are really busy. So that's one element of it. He's in custody. And if the trial doesn't go ahead, it's going to be another probably 2 years, I suppose, before it does. But the other element of it is a little bit maybe more interesting, more speculative on our part. But
When we were there last week, I confidently predicted it wouldn't go ahead next week. And I have a great history of getting those things wrong. I remember predicting confidently that Joe Riley would walk free, you know. I think it has normally when some substantial evidence, which is definitely what Jonathan Dowdall's witness statement is, you can see that might push things back months. But Jerry Hutch and his defence team have been anxious to push it through. There could be any number of reasons for that. He's obviously on remand, while unlike the other two co-accused who are on bail. But I suppose once a trial begins, it becomes very, very difficult for new evidence to be introduced, you know, because obviously the defence have to have all that evidence in advance, which you see with the disclosure yesterday. If something was to come to light in a number of months' time, I mean, it is theoretically possible that it could be introduced as part of the trial. But really, Once it begins, you know, Jerry Hutch is likely to know what he faces.
So in other words, and last week when we were there, there was some element of, so the, you know, the statements given by Dowdall, so that was it. The defence said, that's all we can expect. And the prosecution quickly stood up and said, well, now, hang on. Don't put the cart before the horse sort of thing. In other words, making a suggestion that maybe Dowdall had more to say. So in other words, if this trial gets going, that Dowdall will have to have, you know, it'll be difficult for him to expand on what already he's given.
And I suppose in terms of the prosecution, if something Jonathan, as we heard in court, that Jonathan Dowdall's statement was given at a very late point. But, you know, if somebody was, the Gardaí were to follow something up and find some new evidence of a type, that becomes much more difficult to introduce once a trial has begun. And also becomes, if there's appeals or anything like that, you can't introduce new evidence at that stage. So really, once a trial begins, Jerry Hutch is likely, and you know, to know what he faces. Mm-hmm. And you know, that could be a motivating factor for getting a thing going.
Hutch has a reputation of being a very wily individual, a sort of a master of his art, shall we say. And he is facing trial, but he doesn't really have much in background by way of convictions. Has he anything at all in recent times? Because from memory, the last time I was writing about him, I think I noted that he had nothing since his early 20s.
No, I mean, he obviously spent time in prison as a juvenile. You know, he was famously part of a gang of, if you want, like, a, you know, of kids, really, that...
Oh, they were that. They were called the Bugsy Malones.
They were called the Bugsy Malones after the famous musical. But, I mean, they were effectively juveniles, most of them. Mm. And they became kind of famous or infamous, I think, because they started appearing on the radio and in newspapers as kind of a new wave of tearaway criminals.
They used to hop the counters in shops around the city centre and rob, and then I think the suspicion is that they kind of went on to become proper armed robbers.
Yeah, and there was joyriding, and all of this was kind of probably new at the time, if you know what I mean. It was the first wave of that type of tearaway teenager types committing serious crimes, and it became I don't think Joe Duffy was around, but it was that type of phenomenon. It was, maybe Joe Duffy was around, I'm not sure, but...
Yeah. But he probably was.
But yeah, like, it was on the radio and all of that. And I remember some of the Young General then was following up, and that was all on the radio. That was probably... But they were the precursor to that. And of course, Jerry Hutch was famously interviewed by RTÉ talking about it as a teenager. But after that, he did go to St. Pat's at one point, St. Pat's Young Reform, the sort of juvenile wing of Mountjoy, and then spent some time in the senior prisons, but then has absolutely no criminal record for decades, you know.
And, you know, while he has been, you know, suspected of being involved in very high profile crimes, he was hit by a bill from the Criminal Assets Bureau. He has managed to stay away from courts, and that is either a measure of innocence, bad policing, or a guy who is very good at his chosen career. So we'll just park that little bit there, right? Because it feeds into some documents that we have been privy to that were sent to me directly and have been put up on a number of social media channels. But they are sort of documents purporting to be notes related to Dowdall's statement. Now, we've no idea where they're coming from, but they're interesting.
Yeah, I mean, we've no idea where they're coming from or even how accurate they are, but they're very extensive notes, 13 pages, I think, of commentary on Jonathan Dowdall's, you know, alleged witness statement, effectively. You know, you get used to reading these things, I suppose, and there's a certain amount of it seems quite accurate in what is said.
There's a certain amount of it we know is accurate because we heard details of it in the court. I mean, for example, that he
visited Strabane the day before the Regency hotel attack. Now, we weren't told what he did in Strabane, but we do know from his defence from Michael O'Higgins, senior counsel, he told the court that both Dowdall and his father were in Strabane that day before. We know the details of the key card because we heard that officially in court. And there's other little bits that we are able to say from it. Yeah, no, they are accurate.
Yeah.
That we know of.
Some of it involves meeting Shane Rowan, who was ultimately convicted of weapons offences that were, you know, linked to the Regency anyway, whether that was proven beyond a reasonable doubt. Shane Rowan was a well-known Republican, involved in dissident groups, and would eventually serve a prison sentence for these. So, you know, there's you know, mentioned that Dowdall met with Shane Rowan. There's
the day before the Regency,
and
hotel,
you know,
attack.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, there's that's the fact that Jonathan Dowdall travelled up there, the fact that he, you know, associated himself as a Republican, as having somebody with contacts within the broader Republican movement, for want of a better term. That's all. You know, that's all well documented.
It's all on the record now, and it has been in the Special Criminal Court.
Yeah, and obviously the fact that the Dowdall was involved in booking that hotel room. That hotel room was ultimately used by Flat Cap, as he became known, a dissident Republican. That's all a fact. It's a fact, obviously, that Jonathan Dowdall has pled guilty as well to a broader connection to the murder charge in the Regency. So he's obviously, you know, accepted that he had an involvement in the participation of that gun attack. So that's not up for dispute. So again, it's another sign that, you know, there's going to be a what we always call a legal battle in the courts, but there's also another battle that's been played out on social media. Just the absolute, we've talked about it again and again, the modern phenomenon of organised criminality being played out in social media as a propaganda war as well.
If this stuff is accurate, if this stuff is proper notes from the proper statement, why has it been put out into the public forum? Is it so as Dowdall might be privy to what's coming at him?
I don't know. I mean, is it an emotional reaction to somebody, you know?
And these are definitely, by the way, let's just get this on the record. These are, I would say, definitely not notes from the legal team.
No, they're not. No.
Involved with Jerry Hutch.
No, in fact, there's better grammar than normal in some of these things, but certainly not the standard one would expect from our legals.
Yeah.
So they're not notes of that type. They're personal.
And when I was sent them, I asked a specific question of the individual, and the answer told me that this was not a legal professional.
No. And, you know, I think these kind of social media posts, which gather huge attention from the people, you know, in the broader, who know the characters involved, I suppose it all adds to raising the temperature, you know?
Give journalists something to talk about, because I did get sent them direct. Let's come on.
Well, you know, that's good.
But
to
we're talking around them, and we've taken legal advice before we refer to them at all.
Yeah. But it does raise the temperature in the community, and Jonathan Dowdall is obviously going to have to go on the stand. It's, you know, even if he's protected from, you know, some of the stuff, it's still going to be a very tense moment. And this does raise the temperature of that moment when he has to.
Yeah. And, you know, last week it looked like that moment could have been a long way away, you know, and we were talking about how stressed he looked and all the rest of it. And there's two sides to that, because if it had been a long way away, it would have given him a bit of time maybe to get used to the situation of living on the witness protection program, get over this sentence, which is going to happen on Monday. He's going to be sentenced for what he has pleaded guilty to. He is possibly facing a custodial sentence. Give him time to get used to that. Or maybe the opposite is the case, that now he's faced with it immediately. Maybe that would become even more stressful, having to actually get into that witness box in the next couple of weeks and give that evidence. Maybe he's not in a great place mentally to do that.
No, I mean, look, anybody who's ever been to court, you can see how you know, when they're, the cross-examination is going to go on for days. Every word, every nuance of every sentence is going to come under scrutiny. You know, whenever, you know, the smallest thing that's in a statement can all of a sudden become a huge issue when it lands in court. There's been a long, not a long history, actually, in fairness in Irish courts, but of state witnesses, people that are entering or due to enter the witness protection programme. They have come under, you know, very, very stern cross-examination, for want. Obviously, the defences are protecting their client, and that's what they should be doing. But, you know, it's been... there's been a checkered history, I suppose, of how those statements have been received in Irish courts. Obviously, you know, the case with Joey and the witness and the podcast, that was something that was very successful. There's been other ones that have been much more controversial.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the last protected witness I saw giving evidence in court was Martin Byrne, who went into witness protection because he was the state witness in the case against Jim Mansfield Jr. And of course, that terror team that came and kidnapped him and threatened to kill him, being, you know, Desi O'Hare and
Whacker Duffy
and all the rest of them. Now, they all ended up pleading guilty. I think there was five of them in total pleaded guilty, so his evidence was never heard for that. But Mansfield Jr. pleaded not guilty in relation to his role in all that. So Martin Byrne gave his evidence from memory, and it was only, you know, in the last year or so, my memory should be fresh. He gave his evidence in about a day and a bit. His cross-examination must have gone on for 5 days.
Yeah.
The guy was exhausted after it. Every little meeting he'd referred to, he was quizzed up, down, round the bend. And, you know, he turned out to be a good witness because, you know, while Mansfield Jr. was acquitted on the kidnap charge, he was found guilty on perverting the course of justice.
Yeah, so I mean, I think even Martin Byrne would be a good example of...
And a non-criminal, by the way. He doesn't have criminal convictions. Martin Byrne was an employee.
No, so, but, you know, as you said, every little detail that he gave in evidence came under scrutiny. Inevitably, when you have human witnesses, which witnesses are by their nature, people don't remember everything perfectly. They don't, you know, remember detail, times and dates. They can get these things wrong. But so, you know, even in a case like that, you know, that sort of stuff will be pointed out. But Jonathan Dowdle will face greater scrutiny on his own role, one would imagine.
Yes.
You know, because he's obviously pleaded guilty to being involved in this criminal action. You know, so that's a fact now.
And what you might get in similar cases is, and I'm not talking about this case specifically, but in similar cases we've seen before, not naming anyone, what you get is the accused saying, well, I didn't do it, he did it.
Yeah.
And pointing at the witness and saying, well, you know, it's him actually that's to blame. And he's only saying this to you because he's trying to save his ass and convict, you know, and let his evidence convict me.
Exactly. And of course, that would be the bit that would come under scrutiny, you know, what culpability does a person have in those circumstances? In Ireland, that's been very, very controversial. Like in America, for example, you know, when you see, say, El Chapo's accountant, for example, the American courts accept that more readily, you know, and but in Ireland, it has proved very difficult over time. So that you know, we don't know what Jerry Hutch's defence is going to do. We don't know the evidence that's going to be presented, but it is going to be high stakes. I mean, we can say that clearly. And we can say, because Jonathan Dowdle has pleaded guilty to a crime, you know, that could come under, could be a focus for it in the future.
Oh, it will. And, you know, I always think that a court and a trial is almost like a theatre production.
Yeah.
You know, and it's been choreographed perhaps by the prosecution and the defence, by the senior counsels who are leading the story and who are leading the witnesses through this narrative of what happened. And really, ultimately, it falls or not on the performance of the witness. And it's all very well to give a statement, to write it down, to sit in a Garda station and to give your statement. But to sit in the witness box and It'll be a bit like totally. You now in the show. But to sit there and know that everybody's watching you, you're live, you don't have a moment to go, sorry, just excuse me for that. Yeah. You have to give. And look, I think, you know, as well under those circumstances, like witnesses telling the truth usually do really well.
They do.
Who sometimes are you know, trying to... You know, narrate a tale and remove themselves from it. I don't think they do too well.
No, I mean, it's very, like even doing a podcast here and you think, what did Jonathan Dowdle actually plead guilty to? Yeah. So you're trying to recall stuff that you know.
Yes.
And when you're in a witness box without, you know, asking Ian to pause that for a minute so we can record it again, it's going to be even more difficult, you know? But, you know, I mean, the other thing, of course, is
and
that...
And the pressures, of course, of the kind of evidence that he's going to give. And I mean, this guy, I mean, this is against everything he's ever believed in. Yeah. This is against everything
and
that
he's going to be. He's going to be a couple of metres away from Jerry Hutch as well. Like, it's not going to be in a remote or, you know, they're going to be in the same room. I mean, it's...
The court is going to be packed. They always are anyway. But, I mean, and then there's just the formality of a court as well. And look, Dowdle's been there before, of course, because he has his conviction. He pleaded guilty at the late stages of that, on that kidnap charge where he waterboarded a man who wanted to buy his motorbike. But he won't be that used to sitting in a witness box, who, you know, not many people are. Well, expert witnesses, of course, are.
Yeah.
People who are brought in to give their expert opinion on something, they would be used to it. They would know the pressures of it. He won't be, and he'll be surrounded with lawyers and teams of lawyers, because there's three different defendants going to be there, three different teams of lawyers. It'll be an intimidating place. And that's before that absolute realization for him that he's in trouble with everybody.
Yeah.
You know?
So it'll be, you can feel when you go into court sometimes, you know, even though we're just sitting there as journalists with absolutely almost nothing at stake, you can still feel the tension and those moments. I mean, even just sitting there as an objective witness, you know? Mm. So it's going to be a tough experience for sure.
And you know, the other thing is as well, when you talk about this cross-examination going on for days, and it is exhausting, but like a witness has to be very careful to be able to hold their temper.
Yeah.
In that, because you're being poked and prodded, and that's the job of the defence to try and, I suppose, to try and bring out some emotions that mightn't look too good in a courtroom. Now, there's no jury, obviously, in the Special Criminal Court, but exhaustion, tension, pressure, stress, all those things, you know, can provoke reactions in witnesses.
I mean, of course, the fact, as you said there, it is the Special Criminal Court, makes it maybe slightly less theatrical than it would in front of a jury. You know, because judges, by their nature, they're going to be, you know, you would imagine that they're less prone to maybe the emotional experience of seeing a witness, you know, and making a judgment on that. So the trials tend to be more technical in the Special Criminal Court, because that's maybe going to have more impact with a judge than where in a jury case, you know, they're trying to appeal to the emotional reaction of a jury of their peers, you know.
But they will be very focused on this evidence. And I mean, if we look back into the Gilligan trials all those years ago and Charlie Bowden, I mean, the Ward decision, the murder conviction against Paul Ward, was overturned in the Court of Criminal Appeal. And that judgment is very interesting to read.
Yeah.
And there's quite a lot of parallels and similarities between Charlie Bowden and with Jonathan Dowdle.
This is going to be a similar thing, and though they're all different, all these cases, but you have somebody who's a member of the criminal organisation. I mean, Jonathan Dowdle actually said in court that he wasn't his defence said that he wasn't a member.
His defence said he wasn't a member,
But, you know...
And what's the state's...
Well, the state's... I mean, the state has...
Is the state going to agree with that, or is the state going to...
Well, I mean, the state has laid one specific charge against him, which is involvement in a criminal act, if you want. His defence are obviously accepting that, pleading guilty to that, but they're saying that he wasn't a member broadly of the Hutch organised crime
gang. And they're saying he didn't know what he was doing, he was tricked into it.
Yeah, effectively that he got sucked into it through...
But the state is agreeing, I think, because if you look at what Michael O'Higgins said, Michael O'Higgins said that it is the state's case that he was used.
Yeah.
That Dowdall and his father were used in this sort of ruse to claim that this whole Regency attack was a Republican act.
Yeah.
And
yeah. So I think
so. The state's agreeing then.
They're agreeing, obviously, it both. Yeah. Well, I mean, look, they're agreeing. Yeah. They're agreeing to his involvement in the criminal act, but maybe not agreeing to his role as a member of the Hutch gang. So that's maybe a distinction that they're going to draw in terms of Charlie Bowden, who was an accepted member of the Gilligan gang by himself and by others. So, I mean, look, we don't know what's gonna come out.
Funny, he was even in the same position because he was in jail at the time he was giving evidence, which maybe Jonathan Dowdall by next Monday will know if he's getting the custodial sentence. But I think Justice Tony Hunt sort of suggested that he will have to give him one. But Bowden was in jail when he was giving evidence, and he was brought along to the Special Criminal Court, which is at that time in Green Street every day in this huge, I mean, there was a huge security operation there and there was snipers around the roofs of the buildings and, you know, such was the risk to his life.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, Jonathan
Dowdall, we're told, is facing jeopardy there because he's in the sights now of the wider Hutch organisation and also the Kinahan.
Yeah, and he's also obviously potentially facing a prison sentence where the protection on him, you know, he would be obviously the highest risk category within the prison system. I mean, there's obviously prisoners that are under threat in prisons, normal enough, but they normally have a grouping that they can be safely placed with. For example, if the members of the Kinahan cartel, they'd be placed with other Kinahan cartel members on prison wings. Jonathan Dowdall would be a whole other case.
And would his security be purely down then to the prisons, or would witness protection be involved in that within the prison system?
No, I think obviously we don't know if he's even getting a prison sentence, but if he was to get a prison sentence, that is the, I mean, maybe the guards give advice on threats, but it's really the prison service that would be...
It's the prison service that has to keep him alive.
Yeah, and I mean, of course, there have been, state witnesses in prison before. There have been Gardaí in prison who'd be under extreme threat.
It must be very expensive to house somebody like that in prison that needs that much security and protection.
Yeah.
And then we have the family. We don't know if his father's going to get a custodial sentence or not either. I think he's probably in the same boat because he has that previous quite significant conviction. And we have his Dowdall's wife and four children aged between 11 and 25 all gone into witness protection program. It's costing the state a huge amount of money.
It does. Really? It costs a huge amount of money. But it is part of modern policing, I think. I think as criminals get more sophisticated, human witnesses, I think, will become more important. And, Ireland has obviously brought, it's how many years ago since Charlie Bowden? 25 years or something, is it? Possibly. So, I mean, we probably haven't, used it as much. But you see, in the States, it's become one of the primary ways that organised criminality has been dismantled. It's particularly the mafia, they were dismantled through super grass witnesses,
Well, we have an interview coming out, and hopefully, we might put it out on Thursday, in relation to the witness protection programme, which will be very interesting for people. And it's an academic who's sort of studied the framework of it here.
Yeah.
And
better than the uneducated wafflings of ourselves anyway.
Well, talk for yourself, Niall, please. But he's talking really about, you can listen to it, everybody can listen to it, but it is quite fascinating. He's talking about the structure of the witness protection program, how it's not sort of surrounded in any legal framework in this country, how basically we have sort of ignored European advice on putting it into legal framework, putting legislation, wrapping legislation around it, and how secretive it is. And it's quite a fascinating thing that's come up in a way. It always takes something to make us look at
the complexities behind it. Yes, exactly. And you see that with various other things like EncroChat, like other sort of anti-gangland operations, you know. They get put in place, but then the second iteration is where they have to be tested in a court.
I'm sorry, I'm not going to let you have this because I actually have a HDIP in criminology.
Do you?
Yeah. Where are you at with it all? So I've
actually now multiple degrees in various things.
A professional spoofer, is that
it? No. Multiple degrees. Multiple.
So anyway.
HDIP? Google, is it?
Knock that off now. He's not allowed to say that. No, hit the stop button there. Anyway, look, is there anything else we want to talk about in that? We can't really go into too much more on it. But
It's interesting, you know, and social media has just transformed this. But, so you know, the social media battle will go on as the legal battle continues.
This story is like, it becomes more and more like a drama every day.
Yes.
You know, you're watching on some show. But look, for the moment, and we will definitely be on as live as we can be next week in firstly the Dowdall sentence and then the possible opening of the Regency trial and Hutch going on trial for the murder of David Byrne. There has been the indication that it is likely to go ahead, but you know, these things they could easily be put off. But so for now, Niall Donald.
Professor Niall Donald.
Uneducated.
Professor Niall Donald says goodbye.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Crime World, a podcast from SundayWorld.com. Produced by Ian Mullaney and edited by me, Nicola Tallant. Research assistant is Claude Amini. If you like this show and love true crime, leave us a review. Or why not download the free SundayWorld.com app for lots more stories from Ireland and across the globe.
Would you like to be able to start conversations like a pro? Take the Sunday World, your daily dose of what's going on. Do not consume the Sunday World if you're involved in a drug cartel, you're a politician with something to hide, or you've appeared on a reality TV show and care about others' opinions. Consume the Sunday World responsibly. Always read the stories, gossip, and commentary.